Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8.01 p.m. on WCPE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and discussion with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh, sweet it is. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm K.G. Klein.
And this is Double Take. You want to call classic.
So, John, I have a question for you. What is green and pink and making a lot of money?
It would have to be something to do with The Wizard of Oz.
It would have to be Wicked 2, our Wicked sequel, which is now dominating theaters nationwide.
Oh, Ken, you're such a cheerleader for this movie.
I am.
I've been hanging out with this idea for 60 years. 1939, so somewhere in the 40s.
1939 was the original Wizard of Oz.
Oh, gosh. I can tell you it hasn't left my consciousness.
Well, it doesn't matter. If you forget it, they'll show it to you on TV next week anyway. I don't think there's any movie that's been shown on television more than the original Wizard of Oz. And not without good reason. It's a great movie. It is truly one of the American classics.
And I'd like to odious to me to compare works of art.
And we shouldn't, because this is based on the original Broadway play, Wicked, which is a direct sequel to The Wizard of Oz, although using the word sequel is not accurate, because the events of The Wizard of Oz take place within the second act of the Broadway play and within this movie, Wicked for Good.
Yeah. Explain to me, for good.
For
what
good.
What does that mean?
Well, it's their conclusion. There's a song in the second act and in this movie called I've Been Changed for Good. And it's one of the two big numbers from Wicked, the other being Defying Gravity, which ends the first act, and the first movie ended with it. And it is one of the memorable songs. Wicked is not a musical that has a lot of memorable songs. You don't walk out of the theater humming Defying Gravity or humming Changed for Good. But it is the songs by Steve Schwartz, who gave us Godspell and many other good musicals, are very, very touching. They're very good at forwarding the story, telling us what's within the hearts. And for Wicked for Good, Steve Schwartz had to write two new songs. This film, folks, is a spectacle. It is a feast for the eyes and the ears. It is filled with singing. It is filled with bright colors and beautiful sets and gorgeous costumes. It's everything that you might want it to be, and perhaps just a little bit more, because it's also a tad political. What would you say, John? Did you catch the politics in this?
Well, I was so overwhelmed by the visual that I barely had time to think about the allegorical elements of this.
This film, you don't expect it. No. Would you agree that this is a darker movie than the first one?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
It did not mean that the politics and darkness of it should keep people away, and indeed it has not. When I saw this movie, I was in a theater packed with hundreds, John, of elementary and middle school, mostly girls, watching this film, many of them dressed in the costumes of their favorite characters, and really enjoying it, and coming out singing the songs, coming out like a classroom, pouring out into the hallways. And it is so good for Hollywood to see this, because that was the audience they lost during COVID. Parents stayed home with their kids, they made popcorn themselves, and they watched the Disney Channel, and then they realized, oh, we saved a lot of money doing this. Hey, we don't need to go to the movie theaters anymore. When the pandemic ended, they didn't return to the theaters. But now movies like Wicked for Good are really turning the around and bringing the younger audiences back to theaters, because there's no replacement for the spectacle of seeing a movie like this on an IMAX screen or an Atmos screen, where the sound is surrounding you, the seats are rumbling, and the image is just as big as it can humanly be.
Very good. The only reason I went is because of you. And I'm very happy. I'm just awash in the whole notion of The Wizard of Oz. And I'm so attached to the original. It's very difficult for me fully to appreciate.
So the idea that the Wicked Witch could be the hero?
Yeah, exactly. Ordinarily, I'd be very happy for all of that, because it would be intellectually a challenging movie. Gets a bit confused for kids, those little kids in there. They might wonder what's going on. They have no idea that there might be a lesbian undertone to all of this, notwithstanding handsome Fierro. But I can appreciate
you and I agree on one point, and that's that Fierro is almost unnecessary to the story.
Oh, definitely.
When I first saw Wicked,
he's a drag, so to speak.
Yeah, when I first saw Wicked back in the early 2000s with the original Broadway cast with Idina and Kristen, my first take was, what is he doing there? This story is really about a platonic romance between Elphaba and Glenda, which is summed up at the end with that song, Changed for Good, where they sing that they don't know if their lives are better for having known each other, but they have managed to have a huge impact on each other's lives. For Elphaba, Glenda has demonstrated that there is a bright spot in the world. There is hope. There is beauty, which had been denied to her. And Glenda, Elphaba, is a wake-up call. She is a person that makes Glenda realize that growing up as a little rich princess, she was so sheltered from the horrible things that are going on in the world around her. And Elphaba makes her see that and see it for what it is. And that's why I like the character, actually, of Glenda better in the movie Wicked than I do Elphaba. In the play, I liked Idina.
You know,
better,
it's a great point. I don't think, even though I think she has more screen time, they really flesh out Elphaba. But they do give an awful lot of time to Glinda. Glinda is initially, to me, an airhead.
Right? You think?
All right, good. So I hit the spot.
Oh, yes.
So I understood, right.
In her pink frilly dresses and her little crown. We have a flashback in this movie to Glenda at about 8 years old at a birthday party, and she's sitting there in this huge pink dress with a crown on her head, and she gets a magic wand as a gift, and she waves it. A rainbow is outside, and she takes credit for it.
I think we have an awful lot of influence from Barbie.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there is some of that as well.
Yeah.
For Ariana Grande fans, folks, you're going to love this movie because there's more Ariana Grande screen time in this than there is Cynthia Erivo.
I think you're right.
Really, Glenda is the focal character. It wasn't that way in the original Broadway production. The Broadway production, it was Elphaba was the central character. But it's changed for the movies, and I think Ariana Grande really steals this film. But they also, my problem is they don't give Cynthia Erivo any opportunity to grow as a character.
And that's my point.
Yeah. I didn't see her journey.
She's all dark green. With this business with Fierro, who's going to marry whom? After a while, I felt like I was in the bubble. And just spinning around.
Yeah, the love triangle is so superfluous to the story, and it really distracts from it.
But you brought up the bubble. I thought the bubble was really interesting. She's obsessed with it.
Oh, gosh,
of course,
yeah.
And she floats around in it, and she can poke it, and it disappears.
And she looks beautiful, and it glamorizes her. It's sort of like a promotion of her.
And this is for any young girl. This is, of course, heaven. Everything that she's wearing, all of her dimples and her blonde hair and her bubble, they're all a part of the mystique.
A part of her appearance, her media.
It's America.
She's a global influencer. And when you get right down to it, she's not particularly smart. She's not particularly good at anything, but she is good at influencing people, and she knows that, and she's exploiting that. But let's talk about those two new songs, because that's something that was added by Steve Schwartz, because, of course, Act 2 of the play is only 45 minutes long, and this is a 2-hour-and-5-minute movie. So where did the other material come from? Well, part of it is two new songs. One of them is a song that's primarily for Elphaba called, guess what, called There's No Place Like Home. The other is a song called The Girl in the Bubble, which is obviously an Ariana Grande song, and it's a tragic song. I'm sure it's going to be added to the musical from now on because it flushes out the moment when Glenda realizes she's been living in an idealistic, unrealistic, superfluous world where nothing matters except her beauty and her friends. And then she discovers that the world around her is very dark, that the animals are being imprisoned, that people are being driven out of the land of Oz, and her bubble bursts. And she has to face the dark reality of the world as it really is.
This is pure K.G. Klein criticism. There's no way she thought of all of that. And I realize it'd be emblematic. It doesn't have to be speechifying about her change, but I just found it not quite as deep as you did. You're just going down a level that those kids who you saw in the auditorium.
I think Ariana Grande just does a wonderful job. The expressions on her face as she's singing The Girl in the Bubble really carries it. And then there's that one moment, and this is the moment where I think Ariana Grande wins this movie, is when Elphaba says, I want you to look at me. And Ariana Grande smiles because she's seeing this woman that she loves, either non-romantically or romantically, we don't know. But then Elphaba says, through their eyes. And she's talking about the crowds that want to burn her. And Ariana Grande's expression changes. It brings tears to your eyes. Right. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful moment.
You know, one of the only philosophical moments when she said, look at me with your eyes. And I began to think about the whole media part of all of this.
Yeah.
Everything that Jeff so arrogantly...
Jeff Goldblum, yes, as the wizard. I know you weren't crazy about him. I loved
him. But K.G. Kline, what do you recommend about this movie? As if I didn't know.
My recommendation is go see this movie in the biggest theater you can. The part that broke my heart was I saw groups of young kids going into the little tiny theaters to watch this movie, and I thought, you are missing a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see the spectacle of this movie. Folks, go see it in the IMAX, see it in the Atmos, see it in the best, fanciest screen you can possibly get into, because this is a movie that really benefits.
Go the way Wayne and I go, which is to the regular, and that screen is what IMAX might have been 20 years ago, because that is still huge. But you're right. When I have gone back to IMAX, it is pretty cool. I think I saw, I don't think it was Nuremberg, but it was something else I saw on IMAX. And it really was impressive and an enjoyable experience. But it's so vast. It's like being in Interstellar the whole time. It's way out there.
And I love that experience.
Well, now, Ken, we're having a lot of fun with one of my sacred films, The Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz.
The modernization of this with Wicked for Good. Wicked for Good. Now, one point that we made in Cinema Classics, I wanted to go back to. I wanted to tell you my serious criticism.
Okay.
And this is, I didn't believe that I would be criticizing 6'5" Jeff Goldblum. Somebody somewhere was holding him back because, and I know this is really not what I should do, but going back to the 1939 version, that guy played the wizard, was such a con man, so shabby. When they opened the curtain on this guy, I thought, this is perfect. He's just like every disappointment.
But he was so sympathetic because he was the one, more than anybody else, who helped Dorothy.
Oh, yes, my original.
Yeah, the original.
I thought Jeff Goldblum was stiff.
Well, what I like about the casting of Goldblum, is, as opposed to the original Broadway show, the biggest change to me was the casting of the wizard. Goldblum manages to be sympathetic no matter how smarmy he is revealed to be.
Well, that's true.
You always want to give this man another chance. They reveal that he's imprisoned the animals behind a trap door, and you still want to give this guy another chance.
And I'm not sure he's that smarmy in Jurassic Park.
No, Jurassic Park, he's one of the most sympathetic characters.
Oh, yeah.
Biggest change from the book to the film is he survives the film. Ah. His character in the book is killed. I always will remember him as Jersey from Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, yes.
What a great, great performance. But he's been fantastic in everything that he's been in.
Yeah, and I have to admit that this movie spares nothing. For instance, for the Cowardly Lion's voice, it's Coleman Domingo.
Coleman Domingo, so much like Burt Lahr.
I know, he's really good. And
he nails Burt Lahr's vaudeville style of speech, and it's wonderful. For a moment there, I thought, did they get some old recordings of Burt Lahr that they were able to piece together? No, it's Coleman Domingo.
78 version, The Wiz.
Oh, gosh, yes. Created by Quincy Jones.
Wonderful.
Quincy Jones, one and only time he ever directed a movie, and he was never allowed to direct a movie again.
Because the director of that is Sidney Lumet.
Well, Sidney Lumet.
Yeah.
Under Quincy Jones's guidance, though. Yeah.
And Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson making his screen debut in a movie. Cast in that is absolutely wonderful. That movie is also a spectacle and based upon a Broadway show.
And Lumet did one of my favorite thrillers of all time, Dog Day Afternoon.
Dog Day Afternoon. Yeah, he was a powerhouse in the
70s. Yes, he was.
Yeah, I'm not sure he was the right directing choice of The Wiz. But
I've forgotten it that much.
And there are things about The Wiz that are culturally and politically incorrect today, you would never, ever today be able to get away with the singing of You Can't Win. The depiction of the crows would have to go.
Oh.
And, of course, we have our local production, Short North Stage, is doing The Wiz right now, and I need to go see it because I am curious to see how they are adapting it for common sensibilities of today and political correctness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A little bit about the, I love allegory, the original allegory. You were mentioning, okay. We were chatting with Miller last night.
You took us back to 1939 in The Wizard of Oz, but we need to go all the way back to 1893 and the L. Frank Baum's original book, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. People are commenting today that Wicked is too political. Why are they politicizing this musical? Why are they making it a take on current administration or current government issues in America? Well, the original book by L. Frank Baum was a critique of the McKinley presidency. In the original book, the wizard was supposed to portray McKinley as a charlatan, a kind-hearted charlatan who had no real ability to change or do anything. The Emerald City was Washington, D.C. The Yellow Brick Road was the gold standard, which McKinley supported. The silver slippers, not ruby slippers, that was a change made in 1939. The silver slippers represented silver coinage, which McKinley was still also supporting. And the characters, the three, the lion, the tin man, and the scarecrow, the lion was, depending on your sources, either supposed to represent an ineffective military that McKinley had in his administration, or William Jennings Bryant.
The Great Orator.
The Great Orator, who could never, ever get elected to anything. The Tin Man represented the industrial workers and the industrialists, who L. Frank Baum portrayed as heartless. The Scarecrow represented the simple-minded farmers, while Dorothy was supposed to represent the everyday American who's going down the yellow brick road to the Emerald City to see the wizard who is going to solve all of her problems. And all this was really a criticism of McKinley's weak administration.
If you look at this as a truly a classic, the allegorical elements are endless. And I think that if you look at current authoritarian regimes in the world, this applies. Oz is a dictator. But he's a phony, and he eventually has to come down. That's what I like about it.
And the movie comments on how the propaganda machine works.
Yes.
I mean, it's not difficult to take the depiction of the animals and think of Jews. Mm. And think of the way in which the animals are being blamed for every single thing that's wrong with society. And then not just the animals, Elphaba. Elphaba is, okay, everything that's wrong with the world is Elphaba's fault. And we saw that in 1938 in Germany, and we see that today with the eviction of certain minority groups in the United States being deported and the effort to demonize them and say, well, all of the wrongs in America today are attributed to them.
And again, that's why I say this is such a beautiful piece of art that they haven't messed with at all. They have just taken a different road, you know, on Wicked.
Yeah. And that's why the Girl in the Bubble song, I think, works so well, because it's a moment when the character of Glenda is realizing the horrible world that the wizard has created, all the wrongs that are going on. And it's the most politically grounded song in the show. And that's why I say I think it's going to probably be added to the musical from this point on, because it does introduce that element, and it is so beautifully done. But I do want to make a little comparison between the original Broadway show, Wicked, and Wicked, the movies.
Okay.
I had the benefit of seeing the original Broadway show in the original run with Idina and Kristen, and the original Kristen Chenoweth as Glenda, Idina Menzel as Elphaba. And the big difference here is Idina portrayed Elphaba with much more vulnerability. Cynthia Erivo has built this wall up around her, wall after wall of defenses, and her character never really changes for me in the movies, especially in the second film. She is a defensive person through and through who never shows any sign of weakness. She can't afford weakness. Mm. And as the world turns on her, she can afford weakness even less. Idina managed to portray her with a sense of vulnerability that Cynthia Erivo never could come up with. And at the end of the Broadway show, I'm crying, not for Glenda, but for Elphaba, because she is a sensitive character. She's a loving character, and she is being beaten into the ground by the world around her. And eventually, at the end, she manages to triumph. But that was Idina's natural ability to portray vulnerability. When her voice goes down into the lower end of a register, it sounds very young and vulnerable.
Idina
Menzel.
Oh, Menzel,
yeah.
Okay.
And Disney found this out, too, when they were doing Frozen. When she got into the lower range singing Let It Go, they realized, wait a minute, we can portray this character as a sympathetic heroine, not as the villain. And that's when Frozen got turned around, when the idea that Elsa should actually be a hero, not a villain, largely that was due to Idina Menzel and her voice. And that carried through, especially in when she's singing Defying Gravity. You find yourself rooting for Idina. But in Cynthia Erivo, it's difficult because her character doesn't grow. Her character doesn't change. She stays defensive. She stays with the walls around her. And that doesn't change right up until the end. So I didn't find myself rooting for Elphaba in the movies nearly as much as I did in the Broadway show. On the other hand, I like Ariana Grande just a bit more than Kristen Chenoweth. Not a lot, just a little bit.
I think they gave her more to work with.
They gave her more to work with, yeah. And Ariana Grande took it and ran with it.
And she is, though, the classic American beauty, just pulling on you for that, on the long tradition of blue-eyed blondes, petite, and so on. And I mentioned in our last iteration of this show, Barbie.
Yeah. Ariana was a great choice for this role because Kristen Chenoweth is, if I'm not mistaken, 5 foot even.
See.
And the only thing we lose with height in this is that Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande are only about 1 or 2 inches apart. They look about the same height. But if you ever saw the original show, Idina Menzel is about 5'8", and Kristen Chenoweth was 5 foot. So Idina was a head plus over her.
Oh.
She towered over her like a linebacker on the football field versus the kicker.
Can't hide that on the stage.
No, you couldn't hide that on the stage. And it made Elphaba seem socially awkward and physically awkward. Idina made the character seem like this towering, slightly awkward person. But Cynthia can't carry that because she's about the same height and size as Ariana Grande. So you lose in the movies that physical awkwardness that Idina brought to Elphaba. It's just not there.
Well, Ken, let me comment upon my experience as a young man with this very influential movie from the original 1939. Why is it so easy for me to draw up the images and the sentiment of that original when I think it's going to be more difficult with Wicked?
Because you saw it as a kid.
Well, I wonder.
Things that you see, music that you hear as a child, things that you see as a child musically, they stay in your memory forever. Even folks that are in memory care with Alzheimer's, when a family member plays their favorite song as a child, they comes right back and they'll sing right along. You never lose your memory of music from your childhood.
And I agree. And I think and there are some memorable songs there. I'm not sure any of the songs I saw in Wicked that I will remember.
Wicked is not known for being something you come out of the theater humming.
I know it's not.
Yeah, no, it is not that kind of
another
play.
Characteristic of the 1939 is its actual simplicity. It didn't seem so at the time. But as you juxtapose that with current Wicked, the visual impact of both films is completely different.
Oh, yes.
Even though you have a phony yellow brick road, all of your sets are obviously sets.
But that movie was so advanced for its time. Those sets were so extensive and beautiful.
I know.
That it was, in 1939, what Wicked is today. It's pushing the very boundaries of costume design, set design, cinematography. They are very similar in their respective times.
Then I would like to add, and this is really unfair, your little beloved cutie Blondo can't possibly hold a candle to Judy Garland.
Well, she doesn't have the melting of Garland.
Yeah, sure. But even everything that Garland brings to that is so genius.
Garland was an amazing singer, always remained an amazing singer. Cynthia Erivo is an amazing singer.
Yes, she
They're
is.
Very different styles. Cynthia is a soprano. Dorothy was a mezzo. But yes, each in their own way, very, very special talents. Now, one thing I will say, though, I love about this movie is this movie does not hold back its punches on
agree.
Dorothy.
I know what you're going to say.
You know what I'm going to say. Elphaba does not like Dorothy. I mean, there's a moment in this movie that just I loved when she refers to Dorothy as that mule. Why did you let that hick mule get onto the yellow brick road? Yeah. Now, we see Dorothy from behind.
We don't see her face.
We see her in silhouette, but we never see her face. But I will say, what little we do see of Dorothy looks very, very much like the Judy Garland Dorothy.
And I agree.
She is dressed, she's physically the same height and shape.
But don't you think it's brilliant not to show her face?
Oh, of course. You can't. You can't, because you don't want to recast character of Dorothy if you don't have to. And you don't have to with this. You can make it the Judy Garland Dorothy by just not showing the face. There's that moment when, after she throws the water on Elphaba, that Dorothy picks up the broom and thrusts it into the air in a moment of victory.
Right.
That would be so out of character for the original 1939 Dorothy.
Who's really a sweetheart.
But brings out a much, much less sympathetic side to the wicked Dorothy. This is a person that thinks that she just killed somebody, and she's victorious, not sympathetic.
All right, K.G. Klein. I knew you'd save me on this movie.
Glad I got you to go see it.
Oh, yeah, you did, and I'm very happy to have done so. Not to do it is like, and I use this analogy well, there, and that is not to see Barbie.
There's,
you know, you really needed to see that.
This December, there's two elephants in the room that we cannot ignore because of their box office potential and their potential for being Oscar winners. Wicked for Good is one of them, and the other one is Avatar 3. Avatar 3 is projected to be a $1.2 billion, with a B, box office. It is going to take theaters out of the black into the red single-handedly if Wicked hasn't already done that. So these are two films that, as critics, we can't ignore them.
I don't know why they just don't hire you to promote the good film.
James Cameron, he doesn't need my help. He's doing just fine on his own, thank you very much.
All right, it's called Wicked for Good. What do you suggest concerning a family? Yeah, do we have any cutoff for you here?
No, because it is designed that the politics will go over the heads of the elementary school kids, probably even over the heads of some of the middle school kids, unless they're very up on contemporary issues. But for those kids who are sharp enough to catch it, they're going to learn from it. And especially the learning experience is going to be that song, The Girl in the Bubble. I love this song. It really resonates with me.
I think you're right.
To me, I think it's my favorite song now in the Wicked films, and that's why I say I really hope they incorporate it back into the musical from this point forward.
If they're smart, educated parents bringing their kids, it's a chance for conversation to lead into the allegorical elements. Good and evil, authoritarianism, and so on, these are not difficult.
And these are very timely and contemporary issues.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'm going to say is Wicked for Good, probably the front runner right now for Best Picture at the Oscars. Just because the Academy loves rewarding the last movie in a series. They did that with Lord of the Rings, with Return of the King, and I can see them doing the same thing here.
Well, we'll be around at Oscar time, which is only about 3 or 4 months
away. Not far away.